So what are the misconceptions? They think it's okay. They think it's safe. They can smell it. They get like, oh, they're all the same, right? It's one I don't have to worry about. So that's one thing that's really, really important. It's really important to know the difference and what's the right way to handle based on the chemical that you're using. And if you spill them, there are special requirements based on that specific chemical on how to clean it up and how to dispose of them. And that information you'll find in ST58 and in the manufacturer's instruction.
From the basement to the boardroom, from ideas to innovation, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Each week, you will encounter diverse perspectives from subject matter experts across the country and around the globe. Frontline technicians, CEOs, engineers, and entrepreneurs, with a common goal to help you fight dirty every instrument, every time. Whether you are tuning in for education or inspiration, we are glad you are here. Now, turn on those washers and turn up the volume. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Janet Proust, Global Standards Director for 3M Medical Solutions Division. She has over 30 years of healthcare and industrial sterilization industry experience and also clinical practice experience prior to 3M. She presents CE courses globally on topics related to sterilization and infection prevention. Janet graduated from the University of Minnesota and has obtained several healthcare-related certifications, including CRCST. She is an active member of AAMI and sits on the AAMI Board of Directors. She participates on multiple other AAMI committees, including those that author ST79, ST58, and ST91, and she is an associate or industry member of ISHM, AAMI, ASTM, APIC, EOSA, SGNA, and AORN. And that was a whole lot of acronyms that we're not going to define on this introduction, Mike, but one of the committees that Janet sits on is ST58, which is one that we are going to be focusing on this week's episode, and it's going to be all about chemical sterilants and a number of different angles here, also all built around the ST58 standard from AAMI.
Yeah, and when we were putting together this outline for the interview, you know, I had to sit down and really refresh my memory
on what ST58 looks like from a structural standpoint,
because it just does not get looked at or referenced as much as ST79 and ST91, which is really shocking when you consider that the material that it covers is a pretty significant portion of what sterile processing technicians are doing every single day. And so I think this is going to be a great topic and very enlightening, and I can't think of a better guest to cover it for us.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time,
EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Janet Proust, Global Standards Director for 3M Medical Solutions Division. And Janet, we're really excited to have you back on the show. I know we did one of our bonus episodes for a COVID-19 update about a month or so back. And after we did the interview, you and I spoke a little bit about your experience with quality management systems and sitting on a number of the AMI work groups. So we're excited to talk about one of those standards in the work groups today. Thanks for coming on.
I'm so happy to be invited again, Justin. It's really an honor, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with your audience.
All right, so we're going to talk about ST58, and Mike and I joked about this a little bit as we began to develop the outline for our interview, and Mike said, you know, even in all the years of my experience and knowing so many of the AMI standards so well, ST58 is actually one that I'm not so familiar with, and I'm guessing that that's not an uncommon scenario or experience for many of the technicians and managers out there in the audience. And so we're really excited to have you on to talk about this, but can you give us a brief overview and introduction to ST58? What exactly does it cover?
So you're right. I think a lot of people in processing areas don't understand, one, that ST58 exists and exactly what it covers. So ST58 is the ANSI AMI document titled Chemical Sterilants and High-Level Disinfectants in Healthcare Settings. And it's really a key practice standard for SPD and all other areas where processing is performed. And specifically, whenever any liquid or gaseous chemical sterilants are used. And I'm going to talk more about exactly what is a chemical sterilant here in just a moment. ST58 is not that old of a document. It was initially published in 2005, and then it was updated in 2013. For that 2013 update, I was actually the co-chair of the ST58 committee at that time. And there's another update in process that's happening right now. That committee is ST61, that is called Hospital Chemical Sterilants, and that's the committee that's going through the update right now. That committee is responsible for any processes that use chemical sterilants or disinfectants. In addition to that ST58, that same committee has produced a couple of other documents. One of them is called TIR 68. For those of you that don't know what a TIR is, it is a technical information report and not necessarily a standard, but still a really relevant document. And 68 covers low and intermediate level disinfection processes that are used in sterile processing areas. Most people have no idea that one exists. And then there's another one that our committee also authored called TIR 67, and that one is about promoting safe practices for using chemical sterilants. And it goes through all of the regulatory and training requirements when you use these types of chemicals. So the goal of ST58 and also all of the other AMI standards is really to provide good recommendations for use, care, and processing of a medical device or a system. And what that actually means is that the standard will help to ensure the processes and products are used safely and effectively, and that the performance will be maintained to deliver patient care.
Excellent. And I thought, given the subject matter of ST58, it might be a good idea to kind of start at the base level and just help us get a good clinical definition, just good clarity on what the difference between sterilization and high-level disinfection is. Because I think a lot of the front-end users, they understand that sterilization is for the OR. They understand that high-level disinfection is usually what you see for like a GI lab. But specifically, what is that difference? Maybe not quite so well understood.
So the answer to that question is really key to understanding not only this document, but why we do what we do and when it's appropriate to do sterilization and when to use high-level disinfection. So sterilization is that process that's used to make an item free from all viable microorganisms. That's the kind of technical definition that you'll see in a lot of text, training programs, and in standards themselves. And we know that sterilization is required for items that will enter the patient's sterile tissue or organs or systems or have any contact with the bloodstream. And that's all laid out in Spalding's classifications. Sterilization is required because there is a higher risk of infection to the patient when that item enters normally sterile areas. And so if there's any contamination or viable microorganisms, it will cause a risk for the patient to get an infection. High-level disinfection is a bit of a different process in that it kills almost all organisms, but not everything. It doesn't kill all bacterial spores. It's not required to kill all bacterial spores. And remember that spores are microbacteria, so they're bacteria that are in a dormant or a very resistant state, and that makes them really, really hard to kill. So sterilization has to kill all spores, and not only all spores, but a specific type of spore that we know to be very resistant to that specific process. So sort of a double whammy, hard to kill when you have sterilization killing a specific spore. High-level disinfection kills some, but not all mycobacterial spores. And that means that there is that possibility with a high-level disinfected item that there could be some pathogenic or disease-causing organisms that's still present on that item after it's gone through the process with high-level disinfection. That is okay, unless, of course, that item is going into a sterile area of the body or comes in contact with blood. Then it's not okay. That item is supposed to be sterile, so there is less risk to the patient for infection. So then the next question is, when is HLD okay? And the answer to that is, it's okay when that item or device will only come in contact with intact mucous membranes or skin, because the mucous membranes and skin provide a good barrier protection. So it doesn't have to be sterile, again, according to Spalding's classifications. And a really important thing that I would like everyone to understand is that we could give examples of types of devices that need sterilization and disinfection, but it's really most important to realize it's how that device is used that determines how it should be processed. It's not the name of the device. And I think flexible endoscopes have taught us that lesson. We know device manufacturers design an instrument for a specific use, but it's where that device contacts the patient that determines the level of risk of infection for that patient. And then it's that risk that in turn defines if it should be sterile or high-level disinfection is good enough.
That is such an important key understanding for frontline technicians to really understand the why behind what we do and the why behind the different processes. And this is such a critical issue. And I know that high-level disinfection and even, you know, chemical sterilization that we use for our temperature-sensitive devices that are going back into the OR is such a common thing in our sterile processing departments. Why is it, do you think, that ST58 just simply isn't known as well as ST79 or even ST91?
So I think you're right. It's not known. If an ST58's title, it said something like, this is the standard for low temperature hydrogen peroxide for STERAD, I bet it would be a lot more well known and very commonly used. But the title itself is sort of generic, and it's difficult to be able to understand exactly what that means, because I think a lot of people don't really even understand what a chemical sterilant is. And in fact, it's a really broad category of microbiocidal liquids and gases that are used on items that can't take steam sterilization, as you just mentioned. Sometimes we talk about low temperature sterilization, and that's accurate because these processes do run at lower temperatures. You know, these processes, just like steam, have critical parameters. And for low temperature processes, those temps usually run around 40 to 60 degrees Celsius versus steam sterilization, right? That's more than twice that, like, you know, 121, 132. And so they do run it at a much lower temperature process. And we know that those are for devices that can't take the high heat and humidity that we see in steam sterilization processes. Sometimes we also refer to low temperature processes, high level disinfection, or sometimes by the acronym HLD. And sometimes we talk about these processes by the name of the sterilizer. So how many times have you said or heard that this pack goes into the STERAD? So STERAD is a gaseous chemical sterilization process that uses vaporized hydrogen peroxide and the hydrogen peroxide is the chemical sterilant. Now, hydrogen peroxide can either be a vapor or a gas, but can also be a liquid high-level disinfectant. But if you let it soak or expose it long enough, it can actually achieve sterilization and kill everything. Are you confused yet? I'm guessing yes, but the key takeaway point is that all chemical sterilants and high-level disinfectants are used on items that can't withstand steam. Chemical sterilant can be a gas used in a sterilizer to achieve sterilization, and those systems we know as V-Pro, Steris V-Pro, Sterad, or the newer Sterilucent system. And other chemical sterilants are liquids that are used to reprocess or achieve high-level disinfection, and our most common use for that is for flexible endoscopes.
So, Janet, you talked about the gaseous forms, but there's also liquid forms, and I know that's right where you were headed, but especially for a lot of those clinic settings, Cydex. So is Cydex covered in ST58?
So you're right. Cydex is covered by ST58. So Cydex is a brand name for both glutaraldehyde liquid chemical sterilants and also OPA liquid chemical sterilants, which also makes it very confusing. There are liquids that are used in reprocessing that can achieve high-level disinfection, and the most common use for them now is for flexible endoscopes and an automated reprocessor. But high-level disinfectants can also be used in a manual process where you put the high-level disinfectant in a tub or a bin. So what are the chemical sterilants that are available? There's actually quite a few of them. And so with chemical sterilants is that it's going to include glutaraldehyde solutions, so that's Cydex, hydrogen peroxide solutions, orthothaldehyde solutions, parasitic acid hydrogen peroxide solutions, sodium hypochlorite solutions, chemical vapor sterilants, which include hydrogen peroxide gas and ozone sterilization, and then some of the newer processes where they combine hydrogen peroxide and ozone together. So you can see there is a large variety of different kinds of chemical sterilants, and some of them are only liquids, and some of them can also be presented for processing in a gaseous form. So why are we calling them all chemical sterilants when it actually includes those that sterilize and those that only high-level disinfect? FDA defines them that way. They define all of these types of chemicals as chemical sterilants, but some achieve sterilization and others only achieve high-level disinfection.
I see. So the FDA is really looking at the fact that it's chemically related and it's categorizing it separate from steam, not related to high-level disinfection. However, that is most commonly the case.
Yes, it is. So these chemical sterilants, FDA is saying, one, they're chemicals, they're sterilants, but sterilant doesn't necessarily mean you're going to use it to achieve sterilization. You could use the sterilant to achieve high-level disinfection. And it's super confusing. I don't deny that. So if you want to learn more about it, in ST58 Annex A, it's a really, really good section, actually written by the FDA or the FDA members on our committee, where it really talks about microbial lethality. And if you read that about three times, it'll become really, really clear to you. So there's different test methods of how they determine, you know, the effectiveness of it. But that gives a really nice overview that really explains the differences between these. But just be careful if you see the word chemical sterilant. Don't assume that's sterilization. It could be a high-level disinfectant.
All right. Well, I want to note to everyone that there's also a high-level disinfection that's covered in ST91, but I think it's important that we move into some best practices here, and specifically around how technicians can protect themselves. I will say on many of the COVID-19 episodes that we had, including the one that you joined us for, we talked a lot about the N95 masks and reprocessing and the risks there, and I don't want to duplicate that conversation. But what I will say is that it has brought a lot of these topics very much to light for frontline staff and managers that are across the country, and even the OR and infection prevention, lots of different departments becoming involved in that conversation. And so the number one topic that's been covered as far as helping technicians protect themselves has a lot to do with ventilation. So what are the requirements for rooms using chemical sterilants and high-level disinfection with regards to ventilation?
So that's a really, really good point. You know, there are environmental requirements that are still laid out for, you know, sterile processing areas. Not maybe as clearly as what they once were is easy to understand, because now, at least in ST-79, we're referencing the facility to go back and look and say, what were those environmental requirements for that area when the facility was built? But specific for chemical sterilants, it's really, really important to have safe environmental conditions to minimize any exposure of that chemical to the staff. And perhaps with this, the most important thing isn't so much temperature and humidity like we see with steam sterilization. It's the air exchanges. So the number of air exchanges per hour is really important, because that helps exhaust any residual chemical from the environment. So looking at the information that each chemical sterilant manufacturer provides, they all have specific recommendations for these environmental conditions. They often have a document that is called site requirements or setup requirements, and in that document is where you will find those recommendations for environmental conditions. So a number of air exchanges, and then it will also tend to include temperature and humidity requirements too. Really important to have that number of air exchanges. And these have to be followed to ensure that there is a safe work area. So ST-58 has a lot of information, because that's one of the key things when we worked on that document, to make sure that we are providing information to help people keep themselves and departments to keep people safe. So there are annexes within that document that go through that big long list that I had just described of the various different types of chemicals. Each one of those chemicals has an annex, and in that annex, it describes what's required to safely handle that chemical in the various situation. And they're easy to use because each one of those annexes is laid out in exactly the format, so identically, so you know where to look for the information. There's lots of information. In fact, those annexes that are how to safely use and handle these chemicals make up nearly half of that document. So ventilation is super important, but there's other things that are important for safe handling as well.
And helping technicians protect themselves is so critical to this discussion, because I just don't think many technicians think about this piece. And there's no telling what kind of damage is being done that we won't know is happening until sometimes years after the fact. And one thing that I definitely wanted to ask about was regarding these requirements for ventilation. Can you suggest some strategies for facilities to begin having that conversation with maybe their administrators about trying to get the infrastructure in place to ensure that they do have the proper ventilation and the proper controls in place to protect those people? And particularly, I'm kind of having in mind, I know that with the ST-79 update, some of the environmental controls were loosened or removed. And I don't know if this was the case or not, and I don't want to go too far down the rabbit trail, but the perception was is that because hospitals were just simply unable to invest in the extremely expensive infrastructure upgrades to facilitate those environmental changes, they just simply weren't happening. But when it's coming to chemical safety, I mean, we really are talking about very high risk to these technicians. So help us make the argument to an administrator that this investment is necessary.
So the first thing we all should have is an elevator speech, right, to any management that you talk to and administrators, is to remember that all chemical sterilants are intended to kill microorganisms. So they will harm people if they are not handled correctly. And part of the handling is creating a safe work environment. OSHA requires that. Looking in the OSHA General Duty Clause, you can see those kinds of wording. But that's sort of the mantra that everyone has to understand, is that the chemical sterilants are hazardous to microorganisms, and people are a big microorganism. So that's the first thing. And also, I just want to clarify that the environmental conditions and ventilation conditions weren't removed. I actually sat on that task group that helped to support what that recommendation is that went into SD-79. And it had people from ASHRAE and FIG and AORN and a lot of different people, Shay as well, that were sitting on that committee. And the real challenge with it was that at the extremes, particularly at the humidity, not so much the temperature, but at the low, you know, the minimum humidity requirement that was in the old ST-79, older facilities couldn't maintain it, especially in the winter. And so facilities were getting cited if anything fell below that. And there was really a key question of whether or not did that really affect, you know, infection risk for the patients or safety for the workers. So there are still requirements there. That's why I would rely less for chemical sterilants than what it said necessarily in ST 58 or 79. I would look more closely at what does that chemical sterilant manufacturer, what did they say? Because they're the ones responsible, right, for providing that information for safe handling of their chemical. So that's really the key thing. And the other thing I can't stress enough is PPE requirement. We go through that in the annexes as well, but there are two really, really important things to remember anytime you handle these chemicals, and that you have to be wearing PPE, and it's nitrile gloves and eye protection. And you should have your arms covered and some of that, but you have to have gloves on and eye protection in order to ensure that if there was an accidental splash or splatter or some sort of residual, really important to wear gloves and cover your eyes when you're handling these chemicals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, protect yourself. That really is kind of the key message. So now that we've talked a little bit about protecting ourselves as technicians, what are some of the controls that should be in place to make sure that what we are providing to the clinicians is safe for the patients?
So monitoring, like other processes, is applicable and really important for low temperature chemical sterilization processes and high-level disinfection processes. So that monitoring or quality control that's needed is really based on the process type. Is it a sterilization process or is it a high-level disinfection process? And then also the type of chemical that's being used. So for sterilization processes, it's really similar to steam. You need to have your mechanical monitors, which are the printout and charts and displays coming from the sterilizer, a chemical indicator on the outside of each package so you know if it's gone through the process or not, chemical indicator inside the package so you know if the chemical sterilant was actually able to penetrate through that package and whether or not the conditions for sterilization were met, and then a biological indicator to show that that process was actually capable of achieving lethality and killing all of those resistant spores. So like steam sterilization, quality control is critical for chemical sterilization as well. But if that chemical sterilant is used for a high-level disinfection process, then the monitoring is also important, and it also includes mechanical monitors, so again, that printout on the automated processor. And if it's a manual system, then you also need to record the physical parameters, and for a manual system, the physical parameters are the soak time, and then to measure the temperature of that chemical solution for those chemicals that have a temperature other than room temperature. Really, really important. I think a lot of facilities say, yeah, we just put it in there and we'll come back and get it when we have a break. But the manual high-level disinfection systems also have physical parameters and need to be measured and recorded. And also the liquid systems are tested with what's known as a minimum effectiveness or a minimum concentration test strip. Also acronyms of MEC or MRC, they're basically the same thing. And these are not technically chemical indicators like we use in sterilization processes, but they do measure the effective chemical concentration of that solution to make sure there's enough there for it to be effective to achieve high-level disinfection. And if it doesn't, that strip doesn't pass, then that solution needs to be replaced before it's used. So those monitors are still really, really important.
All right, last question, and this one's going to be the fun one, but what are some of the most common myths, mistakes, or misconceptions, three M's there for you, that frontline technicians have relating to the use of chemical sterilants, right? Because this is always the funnest thing that we can do on the show. And maybe, you know, you're obviously not going to call anybody out or whatever, but this is one of those personal experience questions where we say, you know, what is it? What crazy, wacky stuff do you see out there that at the same time, you can understand how it gets confusing, and then maybe we correct or shift strategy, you know, more in line with the AAMI guidelines.
So maybe I will call somebody out, but I think the key thing with this is that people just forget that they're all hazardous, right? And number one, that PPE is really critical. all of them have potential health effects. Some of them are short term, some of them affect your eyes, some of them affect your lungs, some of them affect your skin, some of them have long term effects. And I think people tend to think that they're all equally safe to handle, and that's just not true. And I think you'll find some manufacturers that will say, oh, you don't have to worry about monitoring this one, it's perfectly safe, our system is foolproof. And whereas a lot of the systems do have alarms and they do have safeguards built in, there could be that potential possibility that maybe the person actually performing the process may do something or something may malfunction. And I'll give you a really a good example. You had mentioned, you know, Cydex. So one of the Cydexes is glutaraldehyde. And I've been in many facilities where there is a, I'll call it a bucket, but it's actually a bin or a tub, sometimes with a lid on it and sometimes without a lid on it. It's got glutaraldehyde in it, just sitting out there on the counter, very commonly in some of the office-based settings. But glutaraldehyde vaporizes at room temperature. And those glutaraldehyde vapors are hazardous, well known that it's hazardous. So having that just sitting out on the counter is creating a hazardous work situation or work environment for the people who are working in that environment. It's supposed to be used, if it's used manually, underneath the hood that draws the vapors away from the breathing zone. So that's just a perfect example of that. And so what are the misconceptions? They think it's okay. They think it's safe. They can smell it. They get, oh, they're all the same, right? It's one I don't have to worry about. So that's one thing that's really, really important. It's really important to know the difference and what's the right way to handle based on the chemical that you're using. And if you spill them, there are special requirements based on that specific chemical on how to clean it up and how to dispose of them. And that information you'll find in ST58 and in the manufacturer's instruction. And then I just want to finish up with another common question and sort of misconception is about environmental monitoring. So those systems that actually monitor the air. And the question's really common, like, do facilities, do I need to do this? Do I need to have a system, you know, that's going to detect whether or not there's chemical in the air? And some manufacturers will say, no, you don't need that. You know, we'll make sure that we're below the minimum exposure level. But there's an annex in ST58 that goes through kind of the pros and cons with all that. And even though most systems don't require air monitors, that doesn't mean there's not a risk of having that residual chemical in the air. I see in more and more facilities that they're putting in place these environmental air monitoring systems to help ensure a safer work environment. And it also lets everyone know when the levels are safe, but it also lets them know when the air starts to exceed those maximum allowable levels so that action can be taken. It's sort of like a smoke detector, right? You know, for certain situations, smoke detectors are absolutely required. But is there really any dwelling that exists anywhere that doesn't need a smoke detector? Don't rely just on those regulations, especially when you know that there's potential hazards there. So the right answer is to do the right thing to keep people safe. And that means training your staff, having information available, including ST58, having properly functioning equipment and recommended monitoring of the process, the staff, and the environment. And with that approach, chemical sterilants can be used safely and effectively.
Janet, really appreciate you coming on to educate our audience on ST58. And we kind of poked some fun at Mike earlier when we were kicking off the interview that he wasn't very familiar with it, but it was pretty outlined well why that may be the case and some misconceptions. And so we just encourage everybody to review ST58. And we want to thank you for all the hard work you and the rest of the work group has put in on that standard. And so, again, thank you for coming on and sharing your insights and your experience and letting everybody know that there are updates that are still in the works and on the way.
Thank you again for this opportunity. I think you'll see once that ST58 is published, I know that there'll be webinars and other educational forums where we can really dive into this. And then the other piece to remember is that the committee always wants to try to improve the document. So hopefully in the next one, we can make things clearer and easier to understand than what we have right now in what can be a very confusing area, but a really, really important one. So thank you.
That was Janet Proust, Global Standards Director for 3M Medical Solutions Division. And Mike, she mentioned chemical monitoring from the standpoint of exposure and exposure limits. And then I can tell you in previous interviews with David Hilliker, that's when I learned the parts per million and understood some things around chemical monitoring that are not necessarily as well established and adopted in the industry. And I think Janet did a nice job of talking to us about ST58, highlighting its importance, but also teeing up the fact that when there's a revision to this, there'll be an educational component. And I think that revision is going to garner a lot more interest, not only from our audience, but just from everyone in the industry, and really be focusing on this. And as we mentioned, COVID-19 and reprocessing of masks has definitely drawn attention to this area where maybe it wasn't as well focused on, I would say, from a general sense.
Well, yeah. And I know I learned a ton. I mean, I know we all kind of joked about the fact that, you know, I was happy to admit that I don't know as much about ST58 as maybe ST79 or ST91. But thanks to her expertise, I definitely feel like I have a better grasp and a better appreciation for what's contained in ST58 now.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond Clean.